Memory Podcast Euro Special, where three lads discuss all things Euro 2024. On today's episode, England get off to a winning start against Serbia, but why so much negativity? Bellingham scores the only goal and is now bookie's favourite to be player of the tournament. What do we learn about some of the questions we had before the tournament? What was it like in Gelsenkirchen from a fan who attended the game? And we'll look ahead to Thursday's game against Denmark. And we'll finish with a roundup of the rest of the action so far, including big wins for host Germany and Tomo's dark horses, three times previous champion Spain. I'm your host, Alex Murphy. And once again, I'm joined by Tom Gallagher and Tom Lawrence. Laurie, come to you first. So obviously watched the game with you yesterday, England-Serbia, 1-0, Jude Bellingham goal. But a lot of the kind of reaction I've been seeing on social media and listening to the radio has been quite negative. Do you understand why?
I'm not surprised it is, because that's kind of the way it goes with England. Everyone looks for a reason to be upset, and everyone, to be fair, everyone's looking for us to go out and win 6-0 against, unless we're playing one of the top countries in the world, we're just expected to batter teams. But I think with your feet on the ground, thinking clearly, you'd be quite happy with that game yesterday and the way it went, because A, we got 3 points. B, Serbia were okay and they carried some threats up front and we nullified them. And I think going into the game, there were a couple of questionable positions that we weren't sure what we were going to do with. And I think we've come out of the game knowing or having a clearer picture of what is and isn't going to work well. For instance, who's going to partner John Stones? And I'm sure we'll come on to Mark Guay, but I think that one's sorted now, because that's one of the best debuts in a major tournament I've seen. And I've actually just watched Lions Den on England as well, and that guy's got an incredible head on his shoulders. So I think we're sorted with Mark Guay. And then it's the central midfield and left side of attacks. Central midfield, for me, opposite to the centre-back one. We know it can't be Trent, certainly against the big teams. I think there's just big voids in the middle of the park in certain phases, and that will get exploited against the bigger teams. And then obviously we need to do something on the left-hand side, possibly moving forward, because Phil Foden looked a little bit like a fish out of water at times. So I think it was a really good win. You always want to peak at the right time in tournaments. You don't want to go out and win 6-0 now and then get found out later on. I'd rather us see where we have some weaknesses at this point and see if we can adjust. And on top of that, we had probably the best performance by an individual at the tournament so far, which was from Jude Bellingham, who literally put on a 10 out of 10, I thought, yesterday. Unbelievable from him again. Just what we've come to expect, and a great goal, which turned out to be the match winner. Let everyone talk. We all will. Everyone's got opinions. 1-0 against Serbia, I know, isn't the most overwhelming result, but it is 3 points. It's a clean sheet. It's a brilliant performance from one of our best players, and there's lots of room to improve as well. So I'm pretty happy personally.
And Tomo, in a competition where you got 24 teams, 16 go through, it looks like 4 points is the benchmark to qualify for the knockouts. Regardless of performance, England probably only a point away now from getting through to the knockouts.
Yeah, and Laura's touch. Well, that's the most important thing, really. I'm not really that asked how well we play if we win. Like, let's take us back to Euro 2016, when Portugal basically drew every single game, didn't win one game in 90 minutes and won the tournament. Do you think the Portuguese fans are sat there going, oh, I wish we played well in that tournament? No. Like, the French fans get on the back of Didier Deschamps all the time as well for not playing, like, unbelievable attacking football. But you would say over the last, well, since Euro 2016, where they got to the final, then they won the World Cup in 2018, didn't do great in 2020 in Euros, but then got to the final of the World Cup. They're the most successful team over the last 10 years, you would have to suggest. And they play pretty much pragmatic, counter-attacking, similar to England's style of football. And it's proven to be successful. So, yeah, look, I just don't understand the negativity at all. I think it was an unbelievable first 30 minutes, which was really encouraging, considering that was the first time that 11 had started together, ever. Couple of question marks going into the tournament. Like, I questioned John Stones' fitness. I thought he was unbelievable. I questioned Mark Gay's inclusion, and he was unbelievable. Jude Bellingham, I said he looked tired. And to be fair, in the second half, I did think he did tire a little bit, but his first half performance was just unbelievable. He just took the game by the scruff of the neck. And like Laura said, there are a couple of question marks. But when you look back at the World Cup in 2022, Argentina lost to Saudi Arabia in their first game. And then they absolutely stunk the place out in their second game against Mexico, but got over the line. And then it's all about building momentum from there. So I can't understand where the negativity is coming from. I think it's a good performance. I think Serbia are quite a good outfit, to be fair. And I think, was it BBC last night, they showed like the average height of the players, and the average height of their starting 11 was 6'2". So you knew they were going to be strong, athletic, sort of. You knew it was going to be a scrappy affair at certain points of the game. And the reality of that second half, although we didn't play that well, I didn't really feel like they were going to score at any time. I didn't really feel like we were desperate in our defending. A couple of times we made a couple of mistakes, but it was a really encouraging game, I think. I don't understand all the negativity.
That's a good point about the physicality and the height of like the Serbian team as well, because they're not, even if they're not at our level, what they will be good at is trying to unsettle the rhythm of the game and trying to make things difficult for their opposition. And we've won that game 1-0, and our goal came from a powerful header, Jude Bellingham getting in front of his man and winning the ball. So you could say there's an argument to say that we beat them at their own game. And again, just watching Lions Den again there as well with it was Mark Guay and Jared Bowen. They said that Southgate was pleased after the game because it had a bit of everything. And for periods in the second half, they had to suffer together as well. So they're not going to be shocked at some point in the tournament where all of a sudden they haven't been under the cosh at all. There were spells in that game where they had to soak up the other team having possession and be a little bit more pragmatic. And like we said, we weren't really in much danger. But some of the journalists, I mean, one of them said England indebted to Jordan Pickford. I mean, he had to make one save maybe that was pretty much straight at him. So we need to look through that sort of stuff. Quite often in previous tournaments, certainly under previous managers, it's that kind of thing that builds the negativity in the camp as well. And that's one great thing that Gareth Southgate's had in his tenure, is managing to have that feel-good factor. So I'm sure that we'll go on a batter a team at some point. But last night, edging past a difficult Serbian opposition with Jude Bellingham scoring a goal and being able to answer a few selection problems, in my opinion, is a good start.
Yeah, can I just quickly add as well, what annoys me most about quite a lot of the negativity around Southgate and some of the performances from the English team is it feels like you're either Southgate sycophant or you're a Southgate out. You've already made up your mind. And it feels like the likes of Jamie O'Hara and these kind of like, I wouldn't call him a journalist, a pundit, a TalkSport pundit who tries to get clicks and that. But they're almost wanting England to like fail so that they can have their like clickbaitable moment and they can be justified in their slagging off the England team and the manager over the last couple of years. Whereas you feel like even if England win it and we play, say if we played like that last night, which is quite pragmatic, well for 30 minutes, but dug deep and got a result. If we played like that all tournament and won, I still guarantee you there'd be people out there who said, we've got the best team. Why are we playing like this?
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? So you just can never please everyone. I don't want to come across as like England sycophants though. So I will just say, I think what last night proved was it's really important that Luke Shaw gets fit. Not only, I didn't think Trippier did badly, to be honest, but just in the sense of, I think Phil Foden on the left would really benefit from like an overlapping left back who can play that ball and who can play quickly. And obviously because Phil Foden likes to come inside. And I think that would flow a lot better when we've got the ball. Obviously, Harry Kane didn't have his best of games, but he basically took up two centre-halves for most of the game, got rugby tackled left, right and centre. And actually, for the first 30 minutes, what he did was allowed your Foden's, Bellingham's and Saka's to have that space because he was right up against the centre-half. So maybe that was a game plan, I don't know, but yeah, he certainly didn't have one of his best games. But then if he scores that chance late on, it was an absolute class save, then you're thinking it's an absolute perfect start. Yeah, like Laura mentioned in his first bit. Basically, the one big question mark was Trent. I just think sometimes when he receives the ball in tight areas, you can tell he's not a centre mid. Because quite often, as a right back, the scenarios you're receiving the ball in, you've just got to open it out and then play. Whereas quite often in the centre midfield position, you've got to basically be, you have a 360 degree awareness. And I'm just not sure if he has that. He obviously has the quality to like sort of pick up pockets of positions and play unbelievable passes like he did to Saka a couple times yesterday. And obviously some like long balls across pitches and stuff. But I'm not sure if he's got that kind of that control that you need if you're going to take a sort of a game away from an opposition. But that's probably being ultra critical because I thought he was quite good, to be fair. Maybe when Serbia got on top in the second half, the substitution to bring Gallagher on seemed like the right thing to do, just to bring a bit of energy in there.
That's where you got a squad, right? Yeah, we'll come on to some of those questions, but just want to come back to Jude Bellingham. As I say, the bookies have now got him to be favourite of player of the tournament. He obviously stood up and scored that goal yesterday. Looks like he is just sort of going to grow throughout this tournament. There seemed to me, Laura, like there was a bit of an edge to his game yesterday. Like when he scored, he sort of did a mimic of someone talking in his ear as if like to stop all the noise. I don't know whether that's because he listened to the podcast before and heard me call him the Brummy Palacios, but I don't quite know what that is about. But then there was also a moment when there was almost like a innocuous throw-in one for Serbia and he sort of just like hits into the Serbian left wing back, just sort of bumps chests with him. And I don't know, there just seems to be a bit of an edge to his game, Bellingham. I'm not quite sure what, whether he's trying to prove a point or whether he's just really revved up. But we've seen before there's a fine line, isn't there, with that aggression with like your Rooneys and your Beckhams against Argentina and things like that, where at the minute a media darling, but needs to be careful that the aggression doesn't go the wrong way and potentially turns into a bit of a villain.
Yeah, and part of that will be your comments on this podcast. And I think the other part of it is just horses for courses. We're up against a big physical Serbian side. You don't know what they're chatting in his ear and all those sorts of things. And he probably just thought, right, I'm going to let him have it tonight. As long as if we're playing Spain and they're passing us off the park, one great thing about Jude Bellingham, particularly because of his age, is his kind of presence of mind and the way that he carries himself mentally and the way that he speaks and stuff like that. We don't want him losing control. But I just think he thought to himself, right, we're going to have a big battle tonight against a difficult side and I'm going to get myself revved right up for it. And that's probably part of the reason that he got in front of his man to head us in front. So that, I think that's okay last night. Obviously, coupled with the Wilson Palacios references from you, it probably all added up into him being a little bit fiery for one night only. But I'm sure when we played Denmark, it will be back to usual for Jude Bellingham. But I thought he was incredible. Just incredible. Just doing stuff, just looking for the ball in every single area of the pitch, managing to turn out of tricky situations in manners that you just don't see other players do, being a real presence in and around the box, just so dangerous. And thank God he's on our side because he'll have a big say in it if we are going to go on and win the tournament.
He's got the sort of the athleticism of Steven Gerrard and like that tenacity and, you know, like that determination to sort of win every ball and header defensively as well. But he's also got the late, like, you know, when Lampard was so good at running late into the box and just timing his runs and so he's got that as well. And obviously he can finish just as well as Lampard, but he's also got like the feet and the finesse of like Zidane. Like he's just got absolutely everything. I don't think that aggression that we saw yesterday, I don't think we should be worried about that. I think it's all controlled. I can't see him. It's nothing like what Rooney was showing at the start of his career, where I felt like it was a little bit, well, it was definitely out of control. I watched the Euro 2004 documentary a couple of days ago, and there's one bit in the France game in Rooney's opening European Championship game where he sort of elbows Lilian Thuram. And obviously in today's age, you just can't get away with stuff like that because VAR would just send you off. So I think Jude's smarter than we all think. I think the Serbians, like I said before, they were so physical, so big, and they were at that point just getting on top a little bit and probably being a bit more physical with England than England were being with them. So Jude probably took it upon himself to say, look, come on, lads, let's get amongst them as well. I do think he tired a little bit in the second half, and that's why he come off. But then also, it's easy to look a little bit leggy, I suppose, when you haven't got control of the ball like we did in the second half. But yeah, unbelievable. What a player. And yeah, like Laura just said, we feel so lucky to have him.
He played a ball. I know you said about his feet like Zidane, but in the first half, there was just this ball that he played where the ball came onto him on the volley. And he sort of like sidewinded it, like, but out to Carl Walker at right back, just out of nowhere, just perfectly into him as well. It was just, yeah, unbelievable. A great start to the tournament from him. Obviously, you say he's going to have a massive say in it if England do go find the tournament. But at the same time, he maybe did look leggy, but I thought he was everywhere as well. England were very fluid in that first half hour, and he was chasing out wide. He was tackling fullbacks. He was blocking the ball out for throw-ins. It was over on the byline where he had that sort of chest pump. He was arriving late into the box like Lampard, like you say, defending a bit as well. He was everywhere. So if he can give you that for 70 minutes, and then you can bring a Kobbie Mainoo, a Conor Gallagher, an Adam Wharton, whatever that looks like, you know, if we're not that you would bring him off, but even, you know, he plays in the 10s, so you've got forward thinking people who could come off the bench for him as well. Then if he's going to play like that for 70 minutes every game, then that's absolutely fine by me. Great start for him, and hopefully long may it continue for him. So you boys have kind of touched on some of the questions that we had before the tournament, but I just want to drill down into a few in a little bit more detail. So obviously defensively, we spoke about England being maybe, you know, Luke Shaw not fully fit yet and not starting at left back, Harry Maguire not there, so Mark Gay in there. But actually, if Tomo, defence was going to be the area that was going to cost England the competition, as many were saying, up until the first game today, England the first team to keep a clean sheet. And beyond the Mitrovic kind of pop shot from a Trent miss hit, and I actually think that Vlahovic chance, I think because Serbia had such little opportunities, that's been completely over-egged as a chance, really. Pickford was quite athletic in tipping it over. But we looked really, really assured back there, I thought.
Yeah, I don't think there was any desperation in our defending. I think we were organised very well. I thought Declan Rice was excellent, and he was very disciplined, which I think he'll have to be in this tournament. I know people, and probably me included, like to say his best position is alongside another number six, which allows him to sort of go on his more ordinary runs forward. But I think he recognises, and Southgate recognises, that his most important asset will be to stay disciplined in front of that back four and let the likes of Bellingham do that instead. So, yeah, that was really positive. Mark Gay come in, unbelievable. Like I said before, I'd like to see Luke Shaw in the next game. My prediction is he won't play against Denmark. I think they'll pick the same team, try and go out and win, get the 3 points and win the group, and then you can basically play change the whole team against Slovenia on the weekend, is it? Or no, it's next Tuesday.
Yeah.
And then, obviously recharge for the last 16.
And Luke Shaw's been in full training. You watch the kind of training videos and that are on the England YouTube, and he is sort of full throttle in training. So if he isn't required for the Denmark game and gets through to next Tuesday, that's another week of training ready to go. So hopefully his fitness will be there, albeit you can't really replicate match minutes. But I do think that if there's an opportunity to come on against Denmark, if we're maybe a little bit more comfortable, because you don't tend to really change your back four, then you will. And potentially he might get some minutes there with a view, as you say, of starting against Slovenia. And then you're into your knockout stages with a fully fit Luke Shaw at left back. So yeah, defensively thought we were really good. We've touched a little bit on Trent, Lauro, but maybe against Denmark and looking forward, there may be a call for a more recognised centre mid to play in there. I know it's all a bit of a trial with Trent in there, and Southgate's obviously gone with him from the first game, but you think maybe against some better sides, we might need to have a more recognised centre mid in there?
Yes, definitely. I just don't think he's a centre mid at all. Tiago's already said it, absolutely right. And in fact, that chance that Mitrovic had came from Trent losing it in a tight area, which you can't do when you're a centre mid for England. And it's not because he's a bad player or he even had that bad a game. There's certain phases where it's nice having him coming onto the ball, being involved in the attacking kind of situations. I think a lot of the problems that were caused last night were Serbia managing to find spaces that shouldn't be there in the midfield. And if Conor Gallagher was there, albeit maybe not the most outwardly talented player in the squad, he will provide that industry and energy in there to cover ground, to get a foot in, maybe to allow or to have the intelligence to allow Rice to go sometimes. Because although Rice did have a really good game last night, I really did think that there were certain times where he didn't know whether he was coming or going a little bit, because he didn't know what Trent was doing next to him. And that will be a problem up against certain teams, but definitely the bigger teams as well. Serbia probably weren't the strongest team in midfield, and they still caused us problems. Even coming up against teams like Denmark, who have a Christian Eriksen in there, he will exploit that. So I think we need to get Conor Gallagher in, not because Trent's not good enough, it's just his position is right back and Kyle Walker's playing there. I'd love to have the Calvin Phillips of Euro 2021. If we had him and Rice in there now, exactly how we did 3 years ago, I think that'd be perfect. Conor Gallagher, I think, will be the best option now, and I'd be really surprised if we don't see that happen probably on Thursday.
Tommy, you think we might go with the same starting 11 on Thursday, then Trent get another go in there?
Yeah, I think so. I agree with most of the things that Laura said. I just don't think they'll make a change against Denmark. I don't really see any particular issue in his performance. Okay, there are a couple of times where he did give the ball away, and obviously against better opposition, that Mitrovic chance goes in, and then like all of a sudden his like face is planted all over the back pages, and it's like, what a decision to play him. So fine margins and all that. I just think they'll give him another chance in there because he didn't play bad enough to... It wasn't a stinker, was it? I thought he did all right. And it seems like when you listen to all of the conversation and the interviews with Declan Rice and Trent and Jude Bellingham, seems like they've all kind of like had this idea that this is what's going to happen. And they've been gearing Trent up to and getting him mentally prepared to play this way for England. And I just don't see that they would make any changes going into the second game when we've just faced the hardest opposition in the group. We've won it, I wouldn't say comfortably, but we've won the hardest game of the group. And when you watch the Denmark and Slovenia game beforehand, you probably think we're probably going to get 9 points. I wouldn't panic with any changes, to be honest. Although I do agree with Laura in the sense of, I think the plan will be when we play Italy or France in the quarters and semis, Conor Gallagher will be in there 100%.
I think with Trent as well, he, with his ability from dead balls, kind of ingrains himself in the team a bit for that as well. He seemed like he was on quite a lot of the set pieces. There was a free kick in what was kind of coined sort of Trent range, which he did hit into the wall, but he seems to be on those free kicks now when you've got the likes of Foden and Trippier and people like that, which we know what they can do from free kicks on the pitch, shows how kind of highly he's regarded in that as well. So I think you're right. I think he might stay in there against Denmark. Southgate's comments were that he was really pleased with Trent as well. And actually, I did see some of the bits from like Declan Rice saying you're going to see a new Trent Alexander-Arnold at this competition and that sort of thing. So I think within the camp, well-respected. I saw he was sort of the main celebrator with Bellingham, who's obviously our main man at the moment as well. So yeah, all of those things adding up, I reckon that Trent might have another dig at it against Denmark with maybe one of the other centre mids coming in for the final group game. It's my view.
I don't think it's really about Denmark because we're probably going to beat them regardless, even if you played Konsa in midfield. One thing that's been levelled against Southgate in previous tournaments is being a little bit reactive rather than proactive with what he's doing. And I think there's, like you boys have both said there as well, when we get into the latter stages of the tournament, we're playing better opposition, we are going to need to change that. Why persist with it in the group games now when I think it's almost guaranteed that that isn't going to be good enough in the latter stages? And maybe I'm wrong. Maybe when we're playing better teams, although we might get overrun a little bit in midfield, having Trent in there might cause more danger going the other way, which seems weird to say because we're talking about a right back going into midfield and we're worried about the defensive aspect of it. But I think there's a big decision to be made there from Gareth Southgate because, like you say, from what the other players are saying, this is the plan to have Trent in there. But I really, really think that'll be a big Achilles heel and there's going to be a big shout needed at some point in order for us to be able to compete in the middle of the park with the bigger teams. So whether they do it against Denmark or whether they just chuck Gallagher straight in when we're in the quarterfinals against France, I don't know what the right answer is there, but I do think it's going to have to be done, because I personally thought that, you're right, Trent didn't disgrace himself, but it was very evident that he wasn't a midfielder, and that's a problem.
The only thing I'll say is that if Southgate just plays Gallagher in there in a sense of we want to get the reps in and the repetitions and the patterns of play in, because he's going to play Gallagher, Rice and Bellingham in the bigger games, everyone would just absolutely slag it off, because you know you're playing Denmark, Serbia and Slovenia, who are all going to sit back, and potentially Czech Republic in the last 16. They're all going to sit back and they're all going to soak up pressure, etc. So, and Trent, he is probably one of the only players in the squad who can play that first-time ball around the corner in between the left-back and centre-half, and Saka gets onto it, or that long ball over the top of the right-back's head, and it will be Foden or whoever, or Anthony Gordon, whoever it might be, out there. So I think I wouldn't worry too much about like bedding Gallagher in. He's a 6, 7 out of 10 player every game. He doesn't really offer a lot on the ball, I don't think. So, and I think you can drop him into that France game or that Italy game and completely rely on him to put a shift in, which is exactly what he'll need to do. And yeah, so I don't think we'll change it, but we'll beat Denmark on Thursday, and then it'll change all 11 players.
I think, Laurie, that's a really good point you've made there, in that we might have this wrong, in that he's not thinking Trent in these games to bring Gallagher in for the big ones. He might be thinking, I'm playing Trent now to get the reps in, because when we play the big teams and we've not got a back five, I thought Serbia sat horribly deep in patches yesterday. So that space in behind wasn't really there for the balls, or the through balls for Kane or Bellingham weren't really there. Against better opposition, who maybe aren't as scared of us and are trying to attack us as well, maybe then Trent unlocks the defence. Maybe Trent plays that ball over the top to the winger, or threads it through for Foden, Bellingham, Kane to go through and slot. It might be that Southgate is just hanging his hat on Trent being his midfielder for this tournament, which is a ballsy play anyway, because as soon as England falter with him in the side, there's something to hang Southgate out to dry with what you're expecting. You played a right back in centre mid when you've got three or four recognised centre mids on the bench. So maybe Trent is going to be the centre mid regardless of opposition. Whether that, as you say, does become our Achilles heel remains to be seen, but maybe that is what Southgate's going to do. Right-hand side, I thought, looked brilliant last night, boys. I thought Saka looked back to his best. I was a little bit worried about his sort of fitness and form towards the end for Arsenal. Kyle Walker, I thought, looked brilliant as well. I really wish he'd shot when he went through. I think he didn't quite know what to do. It was kind of a cross-come shot. Don't know what I'm doing here. So did neither really. But thought he was really good. Played the ball through to Saka for the cross. Saka went past both left-backs that were on there. But crossing over to the left-hand side, and Tomo, you briefly touched on it, but Trippier maybe doesn't help him, but Phil Foden looked lost to me in patches there.
Yeah, he just didn't have a really good game, to be honest, and I do feel for him a little bit, because I think left wing, even though we can play there, I actually think out of left wing, number 10 and right wing is three positions, I think left wing's his least favoured position. But Cesc Fabregas had it right. I think he basically said, look, it's up to you to play well. And actually, there was an incident within the first 2 minutes where Bellingham played Foden through, and Foden just miscontrolled it. And if he controlled it well, he would have got a shot off. And I think sometimes, like, you know, like when you have a bad first touch and it just gets in your head. And I think sometimes that plagues you, and then your first half's a bit leggy, and then it just, you sort of, the game runs away from you. And he didn't have the best of games. I don't think Trippier playing left back helped. And I think if Luke Shaw played left back and was constantly overlapping, I think it would help, because Foden obviously likes to sort of play in those half spaces and come inside. I don't think he played bad enough to warrant getting sort of dropping and getting Anthony Gordon there or anything. But what I will say, I was a little bit confused as why he stayed on the pitch for so long. because he was clearly not affecting the game really well, and he's not exactly the best person to have when you're under the cosh. And I just thought that the game cried out for for Anthony Gordon, especially when Serbia had the ball, because he would just provide a little bit of an outlet and that counter-attacking threat. Whereas I don't think Phil Foden did. Look, we can all have bad games, and I don't think there's no need to panic just yet.
I think with Foden, there's a little bit of like that's been building for a while now about can he do it in an England shirt? It's quite widely recognised what he does for Man City versus what he does for England. And it kind of feels like he's, you know, when you're a bit out of form and you know you're having to think about everything you do, whereas City, it was kind of touch up the feet, bang. He was playing passes behind people yesterday, which he would just never normally do. And I think that he's almost just got the sort of weight of the world on his shoulder, like just desperate for a good performance, like a goal and a really good England performance. And then he might spark to life. But Laura, on the point Tomo made about surprise Foden stayed on the pitch for so long, we've obviously spoken and you were quite vocal about that you'd have taken Jack Grealish. We know Marcus Rashford hasn't gone. Do you think there's a little bit for Southgate there where he's not currently got the trust on that left-hand side to bring anyone on, a likes of an Anthony Gordon or an Eze, when you're 1-0 up in a tight game? He just doesn't know enough about him, and that's maybe one of the downsides of him not taking a Grealish / Rashford.
Yeah, I think that's the... I think taking Gordon over Rashford was definitely the right choice, but taking Eze over Grealish was so weird because I just don't see a single scenario where Eze comes on. Either Foden's going to play there, or if we need a bit more pace in behind, you might put Gordon there. But if you're in a game last night where we're soaking up a bit more pressure and you're looking for maybe someone to keep the ball, win fouls and stuff like that, you would have bought on Jack Grealish, you're right. And there might be a case of Phil Foden stayed on because he knows the narrative of the fans or maybe media behind Foden in the England shirt at the moment. I just thought, I'm not going to bring him off and let the headlines be Foden hooked after a crap game or whatever, because he did have quite a poor game. And I don't think, you touched on it there, I don't think the history is helping him there, because if that was one game in isolation, we'd say Phil Foden had an off night, but he'll come again. He wasn't very effective, but we know he's a great player. Like Harry Kane wasn't particularly effective last night for large spells, but we know he's the best striker in the world and he's done it many times in an England shirt. And also the fact that, like, looking back 20 years, we had Scholes, Lampard, Gerrard. We couldn't play him all centre mid and Scholes ended up on the left. And it kind of feels there's a little bit of a train of thought to say, well, Foden's a cam, really, but he can't play there because Bellingham's there, so we're putting him on the left. So those things aren't helping him, and he is going to have a decent game and be effective in that position at a certain point. It will help if he has an actual left footer going past him. And like Thomas said, I don't think it's bad enough whereby he'll come out the team. I think there'll be a lot of shouts for Gordon to come in and replace him on the left-hand side, because he's a natural winger and will probably do to defences what Saka was doing on the other side last night. But having said that, it's six of one, half a dozen of the other. Last night, we had no joy down his side, but we had lots and lots of joy the other side, both with Saka a couple of times, with Walker, with Jarrod Bowen when he came on as well. So that's fine. We won the game. If we had lost the game and it was because Phil Foden was ineffective, then it's different. And Tom was right as well. There was that ball played into his feet in the penalty area in the first minute. If the first touch is right, it's a goal. 100%. He's done it all year for City. That's exactly what we said when it happened. And if he'd scored that, it would have been 2-0, Foden, Bellingham, lovely jubbly. So, yeah, there's definitely a question mark there. And there is definitely a point to prove for Foden in that position. But he'll definitely be starting against Denmark and hopefully he can score a couple of goals. I thought the biggest shock of the whole night was Jarrod Bowen being the choice of substitution to come on. Not because he's not a good player and he actually did quite well when he came on, but you would have thought on that right-hand side, he'd have been looking for maybe Cole Palmer to come on, maybe put Foden over there and then bring on another left-sided player or something like that. But to select Jarrod Bowen as the first substitution, I thought was quite... or the first attacking kind of substitution was quite an interesting one. But again, he did well on the right-hand side, put in a very similar kind of delivery to what Saka did in the first half, and Kane was unlucky. These are minor things. And hopefully against Denmark, Foden can go and score a brace and everyone can shut up.
Yeah, on Bowen, I think it's quite clear to me that Southgate trusts him more than Palmer to do the defensive work. And he showed that a couple of times in the game where he works like a dog, doesn't he? So actually, when it comes to that cross for Kane, he's got the quality to do something like that as well. One question I would like to ask Southgate is why we've never tried to play Rice, Bellingham and Foden in the centre. Because I think Foden does, he's obviously had his best season for City this year and it's mainly been in the central areas. And quite often, Man City, I know it's a completely different team and we probably shouldn't compare Man City to any team, let alone a country. But they've always played with like a Bernardo Silva, Foden, De Bruyne or David Silva back in the day. They trust these number 10s to do the defensive work. So I'd like to ask the question, why don't we trust Bellingham to do the defensive work alongside Rice? Or why don't we trust Foden to do the defensive work in those central areas?
I think Bellingham's your MVP now, though. And I think that he's played false nine for Madrid or 10. Though we were quite fluid yesterday and he'd still be able to get forward, if he's the second midfielder in next to Rice, is he having to work that little bit harder defensively? Is he that extra 5 yards back for the late runs into the box to score that goal? I.e., if he's playing in the eight yesterday, is he arriving onto that cross there? Maybe he is, but I think that Southgate's thinking now is that he's our best player. I know we've got Kane as our sort of best striker in the world and captain, but Bellingham's our best player and he's playing in his position. And it's one of them. Laurie just touched on it there. You got Gerrard, Scholes, Lampard, England conundrum, where Scholes ended up on the left wing. Phil Foden was PFA player of the year, but he is really, really unlucky that his position is occupied now by what's widely known as like a generational talent who's, you know, likely to go on and win Ballon d'Ors and things like that in Bellingham. So I think it's just one of them where he's got to try and fit Foden in, but it's maybe out of position on the left wing if he is to play. So final place, and we have touched on him a little bit, but Harry Kane, 2 touches in the first half. Loro, he has since said on the radio report that I listened to that he's happy to do that and sacrifice some of his normal game for the sake of the team in doing some of the hold-up play and the hassling and occupying 2 defenders. But I guess if that header goes in and he's had those 2 touches in the first half and maybe not seen as much of him and he's not had lots of chances, if he scores that, you're probably reflecting on it as exactly what a striker needs to do. And sometimes what you see the likes of Haaland get talked about in the Prem, where doesn't have many touches but scores the goal that wins the game, and that's plenty enough as a striker.
Yeah, and who's to say Jude Bellingham would have had as good a game if Harry Kane wasn't in there occupying the defenders and creating space and stuff like that. So maybe it was just one of them where it was the side of the game that you don't necessarily see, obviously. But look, Harry Kane's not someone we need to reflect on, is he? If he was there missing loads of chances and fluffing his lines and stuff, maybe there'd be a worry. But he's just scored 40 in the Bundesliga. He's our top ever scorer. He's our top ever appearance maker at a major tournament. Yeah, no problem with Harry Kane, that's for sure. But wait, what are you saying? Tony in for Denmark?
No, I would stick with England's top ever goal scorer and captain, Harry Kane, definitely. I just think that's sometimes a role of a striker in a football match, is that you're not always going to be involved in every attack. It's not going to be cross after cross, flashed across goal. It was never going to be anything but a really physical battle against teams that average, as Tomo says, 6'2". Defenders, you know, we're going up against Denmark where they play a back three of Christiansen, Anderson, and I can't remember who the third one was, but another recognised centre-half who is going to be another physical battle. And so if Harry Kane isn't sort of driving at defenders and being slotted through and all of that sort of thing, if his job's doing that again and England win, then he can still have a effective game, even if he's not grabbing the headlines. So, I don't see that there's any issue there, but just interesting to, as you say, see some of the negativity that comes out after games. Delighted to say that we've been joined by friend of the podcast, Ross, who's actually gone over to Germany for the summer to follow England. And he's providing some insight from Cologne off the back of yesterday's 1-0 win that we've just covered.
Greetings to the Pyramid Podcast. This is Ross reporting live from the Cologne fan zone. Currently watching the Belgium game. Nice to see Lukaku hasn't learned how to score yet. So far so good, lads. Yesterday was brilliant. The atmosphere in the stadium in Gelsenkirchen was first rate. proper noise from the England fans. I'm pretty sure you'd have heard that on the TV. The game, first half, I thought we were good. Second half, pretty average, but we take the 1-0 win and we move on. Yeah, it's absolutely class here at the moment. There's buzz everywhere. A lot of Scotland in Cologne because they play here on Wednesday. But haven't seen any trouble. So far, so good. But yeah, lots of beers on board. Happy days. We'll check in again soon. Cheers, lads.
Cheers to Ross for the insight there. And yeah, we'll be bringing you updates from him across the tournament. I think he's currently got the funds to stay out there for the group stages, but hoping that he can potentially take some money out to stay for the knockout phases if England go that far. But yeah, cheers again, mate. Looking ahead to that Denmark game then, Tomo, I actually watched the first 15-20 minutes of that against Slovenia and thought, hang on, this lot could be a handful. I thought Vind and Hoyland were clever off the ball and working hard. Christian Eriksen was picking the ball up. And they were dictating possession, albeit against Slovenia. But I don't know whether they tired or whether Slovenia made a change. But I thought they ran out of energy and ideas, Denmark. And so fully expecting England to get past them on Thursday.
Yeah, not really much to add to that, to be honest. I thought Slovenia were really poor. And actually, they almost like, it was like the 75th minute and they almost looked around and went, lads, it's only 1-0 here. Let's go for it. Yeah. They were like shocked it was still 1-0. And I think Denmark, obviously, well, they obviously rued the fact that they couldn't get the second. Yeah, obviously Denmark have got some good players. And I do think international football suits players like Christian Eriksen because it is definitely played at a slower tempo. And he obviously done unbelievable in that game. I think he created 7 chances, which is the most from any player. I think the next one, the next most chances created is 4. So he's obviously their main man in there. And he's got some runners alongside him in Højbjerg and... is it Jensen or Norgaard, the Brentford lads? They've got a couple of good players. Højlund obviously is one to look out for. He'll provide a handful for Stones and Gehi. But look, there's not really much point in talking about Denmark as an opposition when we've got the players we've got. I just think we'll go and win that game on Thursday. And even if we play badly, as we've demonstrated a couple times, we can go and win anyway. And just to add, before Gareth Southgate arrived as an England manager, I think England had only ever won the first game of a tournament once in their whole, like in the last
10 tournaments.
Yeah, something like that, right? And the last 4 tournaments, we've won the first game in each one. So, bit of perspective. Okay, it wasn't the Germany against Scotland performance that obviously the Germans impressed there, but actually I think Scotland were that bad that it would have been hard not to batter them, whereas Serbia obviously levels above Scotland. So I think it was a good win.
Vestergaard was the other centre-half that I meant in the back three. So yeah. They'll cause some sort of physical challenges back there, but fully hopeful based on their performance that England will do enough to get past them. Boys, just to chat through some of the other footy that we've watched so far. So, Laurie, Tomo just touched on it there, but we tuned in on Friday to Germany-Scotland, 5-1 Germany as hosts. Obviously a side that you'd put potentially to flop in the tournament. But as Tomo said, do you think that was as much Scotland getting battered everywhere they go as opposed to Germany being brilliant?
Yeah, not as much. I think it was way more Scotland being bad. That's the worst performance of the tournament by an absolute mile, the Scottish one. It was genuinely embarrassing. And they didn't even want to attack. They didn't even want to have a go. How they scored, I've never known. It was a bullet header from Rudiger, but that was a horrendous, horrendous performance from Scotland. And I really don't think you can take much away from a German point of view as to how good they are. Their tournament will start in the next game. Amazing freebie for them. Some confidence into some of their good players. We know the likes of Musiala and the young lad who got his favourite for player of the tournament, Wirtz. I think he scored as well. Toni Kroos still looks a baller, but let's wait and see on Germany because we cannot judge them against that Scotland side because they simply didn't turn up in any aspect, and they've got a horribly steep mountain to climb if they want to restore any pride now, because absolutely shocking. The red card that they got as well was just playground stuff, the most obvious red card of all times. Cannot speak lowly enough of our Scottish counterparts, unfortunately.
And then elsewhere in the group, we obviously all made our dark horse predictions for the tournament, and your boys Hungary got beat by the Swiss.
Yeah, I thought Switzerland were quite good. Young lad that looked lively up front, who will probably end up getting a move to Fulham after the tournament, I expect. And Hungary weren't as good as what we thought they were going to be, but it's only the first game, you never know. 3 points or 4 points almost definitely gets you through, and 3 points might, so there'll be plenty of twists and turns yet. But poor start for the Hungarians, for sure. I was expecting a little bit more from them, but Switzerland probably a little bit better than I thought as well. So, yeah, up the Swiss.
And then on dark horses, Tomo, your little-known side, Spain, put everyone on red-hot alert by beating Croatia 3-0. Morata of Atletico Madrid, Ruiz of Napoli, and Carvajal of Real Madrid playing for the little-known nation, getting them off to the perfect start, 3-0 at half-time. But in all seriousness, good display from Spain.
Yeah, it was all right. I think Croatia played particularly poorly, but it was interesting that when they were 3-0 up, and they basically, you don't really associate this with Spain, but Croatia had more possession than Spain, and they were able to pick them off, and obviously a couple of bits of quality meant that they won that game. I actually think you boys let me get away with that, calling them dark horses, because I've had a couple of rogue shouts from some of the lads listening to the podcast saying, you cannot call Spain dark horses.
Yeah, you did get away with one there.
What I would say is, another thing that you don't necessarily associate with Spain, it's almost the opposite. You normally, they have loads and loads of the ball and they're difficult to play against, but don't have that cutting edge probably since the David Villa days maybe of scoring goals. But they were really clinical, took their chances very well, which is a great sign for them. And also, I think it was this game where was Mike Oliver in charge and there was the penalty decision? Croatia,
that English chef with Rodri, Loro.
On Rodri. So that's a red card if it's a foul. There's no double jeopardy because there's no attempt to make the ball. It's the clearest red card in the world ever. So that there is either a red card or it's no foul. The one thing it isn't is a yellow. And I haven't seen any explanation on that yet, but I'm hoping we're going to get one because I thought that was another sour taste in the mouth from some experienced English officials. But Spain deserved to win nonetheless.
Question, Tomo. Not sure if you know the answer to this, but me and Loro were debating it at the weekend. Do you take like a all-nation team as officials? So would Michael Oliver's of assistants been like Prem assistants, and would the VAR be like a Prem team? Do you take like a whole nation team where they're almost like the English representation of the tournament? Do you know?
I think you take linesmen. So you've got like the three and the fourth official. I think that's your team. I'm not sure about the VAR, to be honest, mate.
I guess VAR would be less needed to be sort of speaking the same language or that on-field sort of like team experience, because ultimately it's not at the ground, is it, VAR? Like in England, it's at Stockley Park, whereas I suppose for the Euros, they've probably got a hub somewhere in Germany, and therefore the VAR officials can be maybe sort of nation agnostic. But yeah, if anyone knows, let us know. Offer some insight into the pod. That would be great. And then Italy then went on and won after that, beat Albania after Albania got off to a electric start after 23 seconds. I think the quickest goal in Euros finals history. And then we saw Netherlands as well, got past Poland. I think it's clear to see with them that they're very strong at the back and then maybe a little bit lacking up front. I thought Memphis Depay missed so many chances, but a nice moment for United legend Wout Weghorst to come off the bench. And then while I've taken the piss out of both of you for your dark horses shout, we've literally just hot off the press seen Ukraine get absolutely spun 3-0 by Romania, with Lunin, the Real Madrid keeper, not covering himself in glory at all. But boys, still got to see some of the other tournament favourites, France and Portugal, to come in their first game. We've also got Belgium following the recording of this pod today. So it'll be interesting to see where they go. But all we got time for today, but we'll be back at some point this weekend to reflect on England's second group game, hopefully on 6 points and qualified for the knockout stages. And we can then look at some of the other squad players against Slovenia. But pleasure as always. Cheers, chaps.
Cheers, boys. It's coming home. 1, 2.